two, three, four, five, six.
This is Kendall Mead of Mascot, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
This is Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a lot of show for you today. We'll hear brand new local music from Jaded Azarides, that's Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and legendary bassist Mike Watt, plus Wet Tuna from Brattleboro and cellist Hudson Valley cellist Fred Lonberg Holm. We'll also hear about the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator and the protest asking Governor Kathy Hochul to shut it down. And we'll also hear the month in history from Rob Gillis, plus the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned to the WGXC Morning Show.
Connection and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
MV Carbon and Zach Layton perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, May 6th. WGXC will have a live web stream if you can't make it in person. MV Carbon's work focuses on sonic feedback, sound spatialization, sound morphology, and the transformative and deconstructive interrelationship between sound, image, space, and place. She is performing with Zach Layton, who will open the show. He's a guitarist, composer, curator, and teacher based in Brooklyn and Troy, New York. Tune in or turn out for MV Carbon and Zach Layton Friday, May 6th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 9 to 11 p.m. The first hour will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM, and both hours will have a web stream at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alachua, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Bill Williams reports for Columbia Green Media that two massive brush fires burning at the same time blackened almost 17 acres of woodland in Gallatin on April 29th, said Taconic Fire Chief William Hilscher. 15 fire companies fought the fast-moving fires for more than 7 hours, and smoke from the fires could be seen for several miles along the Taconic State Parkway. The first fire ignited at about 1:11 p.m. on property at 59 New Forge Road when a property owner was burning cardboard in a fire pit. The fire jumped the pit and spread into the woods, Hilscher said. The fire consumed a garage on the property as well. When the Taconic fire company arrived. Firefighters realized the scope of the blaze, and officials immediately requested mutual aid assistance from neighboring fire departments. All available manpower was requested to the scene, as well as brush fighting equipment and utility task vehicles, which could maneuver through the wooded area. Just before 2 p.m., while crews were fighting for the first fire, a second large brush fire was reported in the area of 852 New Forge Road No. 2. That fire was accidentally started by a company using logging equipment in the woods. A piece of that equipment may have struck a rock, causing sparks to start a fire in the surrounding leaves, Hilscher said. Wind was definitely a factor in both fires. Quote, we'd get the fire out in one area and the wind would just kick it up again, unquote, Hilscher said. The National Weather Service in Albany had placed the area under an elevated brush fire risk that day and the day before due to low relative humidity and gusty northwest winds. The fires were located about one quarter mile off the road and spread much deeper into the woods, Hilscher said. The second fire was extinguished first at about 5:22 p.m. after it blackened 2.3 acres, Hilscher said. The first larger fire was put out at approximately 7:52 p.m. That fire scorched 14 acres, Hilscher said. 14 fire companies assisted Taconic, as did the Northern Dutchess Paramedics, Greenport Rescue Squad, the State Police, and the Columbia County Fire Coordinator's Office. New York's burn ban is in effect through May 14th. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Natasha Von Holdridge reports for Columbia Green Media that Columbia County has more COVID-19 cases this month than at the same time last year. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said, and I quote, the numbers are up. I think it's part of that general trend we're seeing right now, end quote. Columbia County reported 62 new cases April 25th, 18 more cases April 26th, and 27 new cases April 27th. Mabb said, and I quote, our numbers are going up, but they're manageable. It's all the same story across the state. The numbers are up, but hospitalizations are not up. We've got 5 hospitalizations today and none in the ICU, intensive care unit. So I think we're going to manage our way to warmer weather and hopefully see a drop in cases because of the warmer weather, end quote. He added, and I quote, we've got to get some cooperation from the weather. I'm very hopeful and I'm confident we can continue to manage what we have in terms of numbers. I'm very hopeful that we will start to see them go down, end quote. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention currently lists Albany and Rensselaer counties at a high level of risk for catching COVID-19, while Berkshire County is at a medium level and Greene and Columbia counties are considered at a low level. The start of the 11th season of concerts in the Village in Kinderhook has been postponed until an unknown date due to COVID-19. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Brenda J. Lyons reports for the Times Union that state Senate leaders introduced legislation late April 29th that would remove former Lieutenant Governor Brian A. Benjamin's name from the June primary ballot following his recent indictment on federal corruption charges. Benjamin, appointed Lieutenant Governor by Kathy Hochul in September, resigned in the wake of his indictment. Criminal charges include allegations that Benjamin lied on the forms used by the state police to review his background. His criminal case threw the Democratic primary off course because under state law there is no mechanism to remove a nominated candidate from the ballot this late in the process. The bill introduced last week would change that by amending state election law to allow a candidate to decline their nomination and have their name removed from the ballot if they are convicted of or charged with a misdemeanor or felony. Hochul's and Benjamin's names will appear on separate tickets, but the optics of having Benjamin's name still on the ballot when there are multiple challengers in the primary, including for lieutenant governor, has concerned the governor and her advisors, according to sources. The legislation introduced in the Senate, if signed into law by the governor, would still require Benjamin to sign a written declination to have his name removed from the ballot. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
The Times Union reports that after initially ignoring the Hudson Valley, the state has added a public hearing in Peekskill for the state's climate plan. New York had initially scheduled 10 public hearings, but now that number goes to 11. The public has until June 10th to submit comments about New York's plan to reduce global climate change. The Hudson Valley public hearing will be held May 12th at the Paramount Hudson Valley Theater, 1008 Brown Street in Peekskill. The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act requires New York to reduce economy-wide greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2030 and no less than 85% by 2050 from 1990 levels. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Melanie Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that concert organizers are looking to present a series of festivals at Magic Forest Farm in Queeman's Hollow in June, but they have yet to receive permission from the town's Joint Planning and Zoning Board of Appeals. The series would span 5 weekends from June through October, with 250 to 1,000 attendees expected each weekend. Magic Forest Farm, located on Bucks Ranch Road, describes itself as an agro-tourism destination that is both a sustainable farm and a space for camping and events, such as music festivals. Event promoter Spencer Lavoie from For Life Entertainment presented the plans for the series at a public hearing April 27th. Nearly all the concertgoers will camp at the site each weekend, with some of the staff and musicians renting nearby lodging, Lavoie said. Several residents present at the hearing said they were concerned about traffic. Lavoie said plans are in place to regulate traffic impacts. Neighbors of Magic Forest Farm also expressed concerns about noise levels. Resident Alan DeFazio said he was worried about the scale of the events and the campers and concertgoers would leave the property, wandering onto neighboring properties. He's also worried about how waste and water supply would be handled. The proposal was sent to the Albany County Planning Board, which returned recommendations for traffic control and an emergency evacuation plan, including a medevac helicopter landing zone, should the need arise. Town Supervisor George McHugh filed an appeal charging that the festival series would require a use variance rather than a special use permit. He said the latter would apply to a campground, but the focus of the public hearing was on concerts. The public hearing was adjourned until May 25th. At the May 9th meeting, the Planning Zoning Board of Appeals, the board will consider McHugh's appeal, deciding on whether a special use permit or use variance is appropriate. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli said that New York sales tax collections increased by more than 21% in early 2022, bringing in $901 million more than compared to the first quarter of last year. Almost $5.2 billion was collected. DiNapoli said about the increased inflation, and I quote, "Local sales tax collections continue to come in strong. While local governments are collecting more, they are also dealing with some of the same increased costs that consumers and private businesses are. With prices rising, we are watching closely to see what impact the rate of inflation and economic volatility is having on New York's economic recovery," end quote. Some county governments, including Ulster County, are giving up their share of gas tax starting June 1st and running through the end of December. Greene and Columbia County officials, so far, are keeping that share and letting consumers pay the gas sales tax this summer. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. The National Weather Service in Albany predicts cloudy skies and showers likely. There's a 60% chance on Monday, mainly before 5 p.m., with a high of 53 and a low around 45. Tuesday should also be mostly cloudy, with a high near 60, but little rain. Calm wind south around 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night showers are likely. Again, there's an 80% chance, mainly after 2 a.m. with a low around 45. And those showers continue into Wednesday with a high of 56 and a low around 47. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered community radio for open ears. Monday, May 2nd, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at WGXC. including we'll hear all sorts of regional music at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show, including Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and her band Jaded Azarides with legendary bassist Mike Watt, the Brattleboro outfit Wet Tuna with Matt Valentine on guitar, and Hudson Valley cellist Fred Lonberg Home are some of the local sounds we'll hear. 10 a.m. on the Afrosonic Taxi, you'll hear Akwi Adida, Muia Kanuj, and Pedrito Martinez, among others. At noon, it's time for the Deep Three show with Kronos Quartet, C. Ryder, Pharoah Sanders, and more. 2 p.m., there is brand new music from around the world on the Vital Weekly show with Ak Young Lee, Nadia Rastamandris, and Katsura Mori. At 3 p.m., Anna Frizz talks Whale Radio. Karen Riley is live from Housatonic in Western Massachusetts with a WGXC afternoon show at 4 p.m. Ted Hamilton talks about the war in Ukraine on the Law and Disorder show at 7 p.m. And Nick and Lisa from Palinville host the Radiant Point show live from Acre, 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM WGXC.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
MV Carbon and Zach Layton perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, May 6th. WGXC will have a live web stream if you can't make it in person. MV Carbon's work focuses on sonic feedback, sound spatialization, sound morphology, and the transformative and deconstructive interrelationship between sound, image, space, and place. She is performing with Zach Layton, who will open the show. He's a guitarist, composer, curator, and teacher based in Brooklyn and Troy, New York. Tune in or turn out for MV Carbon and Zach Layton Friday, May 6th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 9 to 11 p.m. The first hour will be broadcast live on 90.7 FM, and both hours will have a web stream at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Monday, May 2nd. 33.4% of the way through the year, we have 50 days left until summer. The early morning temperature range is 46 in Olivaria to 51 in Ancrum. Soil temperature is 49 degrees and is dangerously dry, down to 16 inches. Those conditions should change, as today we'll see rain from dawn to dusk with a tiny rise in temperature to 54 degrees at 4 p.m. Overnight, rain tapers off and we will see a low of 50 degrees. Tuesday, dry with a high of 63. Rain returns overnight and we get another low of 50 degrees. Wednesday, we'll have a wet morning and a dry afternoon with a high of 57. Thursday is looking dry with a high of 69. Pollen levels for today will be medium high. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:40 a.m., then low tide at 11:31 a.m., high tide at 5:12 p.m., then low tide at 11:27 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 53 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:40 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class magnetic storms are possible as we expect a CME to pass close by today. Solar wind speed is currently 440 kilometers per second at 2.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 36, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXE welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXE, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXE and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-WGXE. 1-800-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Devon of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
If you have some broken electronics or equipment or jewelry that you want to repair, the Chatham Repair Cafe is going to be held on May 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Chatham Firehouse. The Chatham Repair Cafe is hosted by several climate smart communities in the area, and you can bring your broken item to the Chatham Repair Cafe to get fixed or learn how to fix it yourself. That's May 14th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Chatham Firehouse. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information about this and many other local community events.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
Columbia County-based poet Karen Schomer and legendary bassist Mike Watt make up the Jaded Azurides. This is their 2022 song Dreamland Fire from the 5 for 5 EP.
The next door neighbor might be a problem. He asked me to let him into the basement to make a repair. Buckling joists, stair lip, quarter round, mold on a cardboard box. Hide here, under this table. Voices in the kitchen. Can I have a bite? You ask such penetrating questions. Roughened hands scrape dust, ridden with fleas. Heavy weight on my chest. I press the curve of a rib, then the rib next to it, until I find the spot that hurts. Everyone is laughing. My organs crush together. Light a candle. Leave the room. Lock the door. It's a kind of suicide. The woods and water are on fire. The village is on fire. The amusement park burns down. It seems final, but it isn't.
This is Tom Rowe with Wave Farm with the WGXC Radio News daily update on what's going on in broadcast news. John Brodkin reports for Ars Technica that so far, net neutrality has been a policy that depends on which way the political winds are blowing. Net neutrality is the principle that an internet service provider has to provide access to all sites, content, and applications at the same speed under the same conditions without blocking or giving preference to any content. The Federal Communications Commission voted four federal net neutrality rules in 2015 when Democrats had a majority of the board and repealed the even playing field for the internet policy in 2017 when Republicans had the majority. Now Democrats hold the presidency in Congress, but Republicans are blocking their nomination for the deciding vote fifth FCC member. So at the national level, Democrats cannot restore net neutrality with Republicans currently blocking tactics. But after the Republicans rolled back net neutrality regulations in 2017, Democrats passed net neutrality rules in California, and Republicans have been trying ever since to reverse that vote. But the broadband industry can't find a judge among the 29 on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit to take on their case to overturn net neutrality. Quote, it is notable that not a single judge on the nation's largest court of appeals even asked for a vote on the industry's rehearing petition, unquote. Andrew J. Schwartzman, senior counselor for the Benton Institute for Broadband and Society, said. FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworkel agreed, writing on Twitter, quote, this is big, because when the FCC rolled back its open internet policies, states stepped in. I support net neutrality, and we need once again to make it the law of the land, unquote. ACA Connects, formerly the American Cable Association, CTIA, the Wireless Association, NCTA, the Internet and Television Association, and U.S. Telecom are trying to overturn net neutrality in California, but so far have failed. The reason the industry so badly wants to get rid of net neutrality there is that California is so large that often if a company is forced to change a policy there, they do so nationwide. AT&T, for instance, ended across the country its, quote, sponsored data, unquote, program, in which it charged online services for data cap exemptions after California instituted net neutrality. AT&T said it ended the program nationwide because, quote, the internet does not recognize state borders, unquote. So far, the broadband industry representatives have gotten a February 2021 oral ruling against a preliminary injunction to block net neutrality from District Judge Mendez, who said, quote, I don't find that the plaintiffs have demonstrated a likelihood of success on the merits at this stage of the litigation, unquote. Read more about this story at Ars Technica. Do you remember a few months ago, the airline industry was up in arms about 5G cell phone service? The Brookings Institution had a headline in November saying, quote, will 5G mean airplanes falling from the sky, unquote. The Federal Aviation Administration objected to the Federal Communications Commission's authorization of 5G networks on planes. Their concern was that the 5G radio signals would interfere with the radio altimeters used in automated aircraft landings. The airline industry also mimicked the broadcast industry, who have been saying for years that pirate radio stations would bring down planes by interfering with the radio reception in the controls. Anyone who listened to the radio might have been justified in scoffing at this argument, since there has never been a proven case of a pirate radio station bringing down an aircraft, nor did the expansion of 5G cell service onto planes in the United States this year cause any accidents. But with more study, there might be something to this argument. It turns out that airplanes have been using really bad radio receivers. Poorly designed receivers were meant for an age before 5G, as the altimeters on some passenger planes failed to filter out signals from nearby spectrum, Politico reports. And there are poor radio receivers in all types of equipment in many industries, not just on planes. As new technologies such as driverless cars and telemedicine use additional bandwidth, the old-timey radio receivers and the new technology can't cope. As a result, quote, large amounts of valuable spectrum lie fallow. Spectrum reallocations are contentious, and users of spectrum lack legal certainty, unquote, the Office of Republican FCC Commissioner Nathan Symington said in a statement. His Democratic colleague, Jessica Rosenworkel, the FCC chair, agrees. Quote, if we want to be efficient, we also have to think about the other end. We have to think about receiving, unquote. Last week, the FCC commissioners voted unanimously to open an inquiry into the issue. They might embrace voluntary receiver standards to get companies to upgrade their gear, or they could impose more controversial regulatory mandates. About 20 years ago, the commission explored, but decided against, setting standards for all sorts of radio receivers to withstand interference from cell phone signals. Of course, the industry's business sides do not want any regulations. Some corporations are now saying the FCC does not have the authority to regulate receivers. David Grossman, Vice President of Regulatory Affairs at the Consumer Technology Association, says, quote, Congress has not ever explicitly outlined FCC authority around regulation of receivers, unquote. The FAA, after the 5G implementation, is now also considering developing new standards for radio altimeters, according to then-Administrator Steve Dixon at a House of Representatives hearing in February. quote, at some point you just get more and more and more people and more and more and more services in this spectrum. You just can't do it, unquote, said former FCC official Dale Hatfield, who is now executive fellow at the Silicon Flatiron Center at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Quote, you've got to begin to take up on receivers. It's inevitable, unquote. Susan Ashworth reports for Radio World that a new study by Nielsen shows many people listening to AM or FM stations in the United States are tuning in web streams rather than terrestrial signals. Streaming now represents 12% of total AM/FM radio listening of individuals aged 25 to 54, up from 9.2% in August 2021. In the pre-internet age, only people who lived near a radio station could listen, but now anyone in the world can hear a streaming station. But the Nielsen report showed that the majority of the AM/FM radio streaming audience resides in the home market. Quote, marketers can purchase time on AM/FM radio station streams knowing most of the audience is from that home market, unquote, said Pierre Bouvard, the chief insights officer at Cumulus Media at Westwood One. At 83%, sports radio had the lowest percentage of streaming listeners who lived away from the station's tower site, perhaps as fans of the local team who now live elsewhere. Radio listeners in the northeastern United States are more likely to listen to their hometown stations online than Western residents, the survey also showed. Dan Godden reports for Ars Technica about a report published April 27th by Microsoft that says Russian hackers in six groups have launched no fewer than 237 operations in concert with the country's physical attacks on Ukraine. Quote, as today's report details, Russia's use of cyber attacks appears to be strongly correlated and sometimes directly timed with its kinetic military operations targeting services and institutions crucial for civilians, unquote, Tom Burt, Microsoft Corporate Vice President for Customer Security, wrote. Almost 40 of the hacking incidents targeted hundreds of systems using wiper malware, which deletes essential files stored on hard drives so the machines can't boot. The wiper malware, dubbed Whispergate, was used against Ukrainian government and IT sector networks in January before the invasion. Then there were DDoS attacks against Ukrainian financial institutions in February. There was another coordinated attack on February 23rd, the day before the invasion. On March 2nd, Russian hackers attacked a network of Ukrainian nuclear power company. The report suggested Ukrainian computer users could turn on a feature called controlled folders designed to protect data in specific folders from destruction from ransomware, wipers, and other types of destructive malware. Read more about this story at Ars Technica. Susan Ashworth from Radio World talks with Jim George, the nation's number one expert on low-power FM stations around the country. Until 2001, the Federal Communications Commission did not license FM stations under 100 watts. But in the late 1980s and throughout the 1990s, countless pirate radio stations showed there were plenty of spaces small FM signals could serve community interest by filling the airways with local voices. Congress eventually relented to the pressure from the pirates and allowed low-power FM stations to be licensed. George began tracking the stations in 2001 with his LPFM database website. He reports the number of LPFM stations is shrinking. Quote, there has definitely been an uptick in canceled LPFMs in recent years. Some can be attributed to the ongoing pandemic, but a lot of it is simply a lack of funding, unquote, George said. Quote, without the support of listeners and underwriting from local businesses, LPFMs cannot survive, unquote. Eight stations have shuttered just in the past month to bring the total in the United States to 1,992. Alaska's KAQULP 88.1 in Sitka, that featured nothing but an underwater microphone picking up whale sounds, is one of the stations that has shuttered since low-power radio was made legal. In New York, Georgia's database lists 50 stations on air currently. Locally, they include Palinville's WLPP-LP 102.9 FM from the Matrium of Cybele Magna Mater Incorporated, Albany's WOOA-LP 106.9 FM from the Green Education and Legal Fund Incorporated, WCAA-LP 107.3 FM from the Grand Street Community Arts Incorporated, Troy's WOOC-LP 105.3 FM run by the Sanctuary for Independent Media, Ellenville's WELV-LP 107.9 FM run by the Ellenville Central School District, Woodstock's WIOF-LP 104.1 FM from Birds of a Feather Media LTD, and Pauling's WPWL-LP 103.7 FM from Pauling Public Radio Incorporated. George says he believes the FCC will soon accept new applications to allow more citizens access to their own airwaves. quote, I think the FCC is planning on opening a new LPFM filing window at some point soon. So those of you out there who are interested in applying for a station should be on the lookout for a press release from the FCC, unquote, George said. Note, WGXE is a full power station, broadcasting 3,300 watts. Read more about this story at Radio World and go to wavefarm.org in the newsroom for more radio stories. From the 2022 album Warping All By Yourself, this is Raw Food from Wet Tuna from Brattleboro. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Jim McGovern from Massachusetts. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
President, good to see you again.
Yes. You're welcome.
Hi. Jason Crow from Colorado.
Nice to meet you.
Adam Schiff from California. Honored to meet you.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky greeted a group of U.S. lawmakers in Kiev, the first such official delegation to visit Ukraine since the Russian invasion began 3 months ago. While there, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi spoke about security, humanitarian and economic assistance, and eventually rebuilding.
Your fight is a fight for everyone. And so our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
The group then visited Poland in a show of support for NATO. Also on Sunday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken discussed additional military aid with Ukraine's foreign minister. Congress is debating a request from President Joe Biden to authorize $33 billion in support over the next 5 months. Friends, family, and leaders, including the president, gathered in a delayed celebration of the life of former Vice President Walter Mondale, who died last year at 93. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar worked as an intern for Mondale.
Tell the truth, obey the law, keep the peace. It's what mattered to him as a U.S. senator when he fought for civil rights and fair housing. It's what motivated him as our country's vice president when he insisted on being a true partner to President Carter, deserving of a place in the room where it happens.
President Biden spoke of his 5 decades of friendship with Mondale, calling him one of, quote, the greatest of all Americans, unquote. Former Texas Congressman and Senator Robert Krueger passed away Saturday at the age of 86. Krueger served 2 terms in the House in the late 80s, before being appointed to the Senate seat vacated by Vice President Lloyd Bentsen. As of now, Krueger is the last Democratic senator from Texas and went on to serve twice as U.S. ambassador to nations on the edge of war. Rallies were held around the globe for May Day, also known as International Workers' Day. In New York, union organizers, workers, and activists called for better working conditions.
If it ain't union, shut it down!
If it ain't union, shut it down!
The protesters called out Amazon and Starbucks. Both have been accused of illegal union busting by the National Labor Relations Board. The White House Correspondents' Dinner was back on Saturday after a pandemic hiatus. Comedian Trevor Noah closed his routine with comments on the power of journalism and freedom of the press.
In America, you have the right to seek the truth and speak the truth, even if it makes people in power uncomfortable, even if it makes your viewers or your readers uncomfortable. You understand how amazing that is?
2,600 people attended the annual ritual, affectionately nicknamed the Nerd Prom. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On April 30th, 250 people gathered in front of the governor's mansion to call on Governor Hochul to deny the permit renewal for the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator in Cohoes. We hear from 4 of the speakers at the rally: Alexis Goldsmith of Lights Out Norlite, poet D. Collin of the Social Justice Artist Collective, Tashika Medina of Equality for Troy, and Kriti Sharma of the RPI Sunrise Movement. Dave Pablo was the MC. We start with Alexis explaining what Norlite does.
And what they do is they mine shale and they run it through a high temperature kiln to turn it into what's called aggregate. It's a construction material. But they fire that kiln with hazardous waste and they get paid to accept and burn that hazardous waste.
Boo!
So Norlite got infamous back in 2020 when the public found out that they were secretly burning firefighting foam for 2 years. Millions of gallons of firefighting foam that contains PFAS, a forever chemical they burned in their kilns and didn't tell anybody.
2.5 million pounds!
But then we started finding out that actually they've been violating their permits and polluting this region for 30 years. So it's time to shut it down. And there's 3 main reasons why we need to shut it down. 1, they're the largest mercury polluter in New York State. They're permitted to burn and emit from their stacks 50 pounds of mercury into the air every year, and there's no safe exposure to mercury. The second reason is that they've been violating their permits for 30 years. They've settled with the EPA and the DEC. They've paid they paid $1 million in fines. But that money doesn't go to the people who are affected, the people in Cohoes and Troy and Northern Rensselaer County. And that's the third reason why we need to shut it down. We can't let the people of Cohoes and Troy and Northern Rensselaer County be a sacrifice zone for this company.
Shut it down.
Last year, we delivered a letter to the Department of Environmental Conservation that was signed by 122 organizations in the Capital Region.
And our next speaker is Tashika Medina, founder of Equality for Troy, combating systemic injustices and racial inequity in the city of Troy.
This is great. I didn't expect to see so many people. Now I'm nervous. But this shows that we are reaching out and good, positive things are going to come from this. Since about the 80s, the Norlites has been a major source of pollution in the Capital District, with no regards to the community that they directly affect. Being the mom and a long-term resident in Troy, I always wondered, how does these hazardous materials affect my children? Also, what it does to the other children in the city of Troy. After doing some research, I became very disturbed. Corliss Park is a housing development that's across the bridge from Norlite in Troy, New York. This development houses thousands of youth and babies of color. I was astonished of my learnings. Our children have been breathing and playing in this fugitive dust for decades. We have no idea what the long-term effects will be on our children. We don't have any idea what it's going to do to their brain development. And they have stood quiet while we ask so many questions. Norlite has blatantly disregarded the community and is now ignoring the DEC and the community that they are directly affecting. This is a form of environmental racism. Yay! With that being said, there's nothing else but to say, but to shut it down. And with that saying, I would love to see all of y'all continue to work, and let's do it together. We call on Governor Hochul to what?
Shut it down!
So our next speaker is someone that I have had the pleasure and honor to get to know in recent years. She is a poet. She is a visual artist. She ran for city council in Troy, and I helped work on that campaign along with many others. And so without further ado, Danielle Colon.
Hey, y'all. So I got a poem, because that's what I do. How many breaths does it take to get to the center of shutting down toxic waste incinerators built in the wake of playing children? Their laughter, an inhale and exhale of particulates. Tell me how long we are to hold our breath to keep from breathing in poison without penalty, without apology, without acknowledgement, without repair. Become fugitives of the dust disseminating a recipe for dying. Death by a thousand cuts of glass to the lungs. When I was young, I was diagnosed with asthma. I know what it's like to lose my breath, to feel like the next one ain't coming, like drawing air from a straw. Now imagine one breath, slow and wheezing like a train coming to a stop. Just one inhale, all the muscles in your body concentrating for one breath, but it's filled with dust, and the dust is filled with dioxins and mercury and chlorine gas and arsenic, and I could go on, but I want to know how many breaths we got left. Tell me, how do you escape a burning building when it's your own body? I think they are counting on us losing count of our breaths. When DEC doesn't even care. When families are displaced instead of the toxic waste incinerator that displaced them. When darkness nor light reaps any consequence, it just is. But today, we do not consent, nor concede to cancer cells, to coughs, to irritation of the eyes, to compromise abilities to reproduce life today. This breath is a protest to the powers that pollute the places they think no one will care about. Think they could make us sick without us being sick of it. But today, as sure as the sun shines, as sure as the sun shines, our breath is still in our bodies. We will be fighting for the air that we breathe, for the water, for the soil, for our lives, to be free of the dust that lingers on our windshields and windowsills, on playgrounds where you can still hear the laughter of children and the soft whistle of dust-filled wind, an open secret of slow death. But we are one collective breath blowing the dust back. We are one collective breath blowing the dust back. How many breaths should it take to shut down Norlite? One.
Yeah.
How many breaths should it take to shut down Norlite? One. How many breaths should it take to shut down Norlite? One. How many breaths should it take to shut down Norlite? One.
Our next speaker is Kriti Sharma. She is part of the Sunrise Movement, a group of college students that are working towards raising awareness about local climate issues, increasing progressive policy-oriented conversations around climate change, and attending rallies and protests in the capital region. So, Kriti.
Hello, everyone. That poem was absolutely moving. Can we have another hand? My name is Kriti Sharma. I'm part of RPI Sunrise, just across the river. We are deeply, deeply affected, and we are so moved by everyone that is here today, and we deeply appreciate that you all are here today as well. So Sunrise, we're a group of college students. There's also high school students around the country that have realized that climate change is going to affect them before it's way too late. So we are constantly trying to get students who are apathetic about politics, who are not ready to talk about politics or ready to attach policy to progressive climate action. We are trying to get them to come to events like this. We're trying to get them to really recognize all of the climate injustices in the area. And we were absolutely shocked to see a cancer cluster, to see children suffering with asthma because of climate change just in our backyard. And all of the winds that are coming to Troy, all of the winds that are coming to these college students from all across the country in one area, they're going to soon realize that this isn't an issue that's in some third world country that they don't care about. I encourage you all to be an activist in any right that you have. Keep conversations with politically apathetic people. So I call on Governor Hochul to shut it down.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month, either in the near or distant past. On May 1st, 1707, Great Britain was formed from a union between England and Scotland. The union included Wales, which had already been part of England since the 1500s. On May 4th, 1494, during his second journey of exploration in the New World, Christopher Columbus discovered Jamaica. On May 6, 1937, the German airship Hindenburg burst into flames at 7:20 p.m. as it neared the mooring mast at Lakehurst, New Jersey, following a transatlantic voyage. On May 9, Victory Day in Russia, a national holiday commemorating the defeat of Nazi Germany during World War II is celebrated. On May 11, 1888, songwriter Irving Berlin was born in Toyumen, Russia. He composed many popular songs, including White Christmas. On May 14, 1607, the first permanent English settlement in America was established at Jamestown, Virginia, by a group of royally chartered Virginia Company settlers from Plymouth, England. On May 17, 1792, two dozen merchants and brokers established the New York Stock Exchange. In good weather, they operated under a buttonwood tree on Wall Street. On May 20th, 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Homestead Act, opening millions of acres of government-owned land in the West to farmers. On May 22, 1972, President Richard Nixon became the first American president to visit Moscow. On May 24, 1844, telegraph inventor Samuel Morse sent the first official telegraph message, "What have God brought?" from the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland. On May 27, 1937, in San Francisco, 200,000 people celebrated the grand opening of the Golden Gate Bridge by strolling across it. On May 31st, 1889, over 2,300 people were killed in the Johnston flood in Pennsylvania. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXE 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxe.org.
Here is Hudson Valley-based cellist Fred Lonberg Holm performing with Abdul Momimi and Carlos Santos on the song Ring from their 2021 album Transition Zone.